Blog Talk Radio.
Too many people in America fear their government, and the government is being run by too many powerful agencies like the IRS and others. I think it's time the people take the country back through their representative government.
Everybody, and that was a little bit of Muse Revolution. Welcome to the Constitution Hour. Of course, it's Monday night, and the Constitution Hour, I'm your host, Ron Golden. I am the Southeast Administrator for PatriotFamilies.com. That's PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. So if you're not a member of Patriot Families, I would encourage you to stop by the website and join up, become a member, and get involved. You know, there's been a lot going on in the news of late, so much so that I'm almost remiss over what to talk about. And the first thing I wanted to bring about is I see that Solyndra is in the news, and Solyndra is filing a $1.5 billion lawsuit. And in their lawsuit, they're alleging that Chinese manufacturers were dumping solar panels here in the U.S. market and abroad, driving down the prices. Now, if you read the article, you'll find that one of the reasons that these companies over in China were able to do this is because of a U.S. government subsidy. Now, I didn't find a link in the article to the specific subsidy, but I would have to assume that that subsidy would also apply to companies like Solyndra, who also, as we all know, got a nice fat government loan to build their solar panels, save us all from the evils of carbon fuel emissions. I just found it interesting with the article because it brings out a valid point of Austrian economics, and that is the dangers, the perils of subsidies. And of course, the solution to the subsidy problem is that the federal government will now impose on these Chinese manufacturers tariff, a trade tariff on any solar panels that are manufactured in China. So they're going to increase, I mean, that's just how ignorant it is. They're going to increase the amount of tax or tariff on these Chinese solar panels by a whopping 2%. Logic would dictate, why wouldn't they just not allow the subsidies to outside companies, companies outside the United States? I mean, if you're going to have a subsidy on something, you ought at least, at the very least, be subsidizing homegrown business and not foreign competition. But then again, I think that competition in the marketplace is what drives innovation and keeps prices in check. The government's not concerned with that. So, you know, a 2% increase in the trade tariff is going to be absolutely little or nothing to these Chinese companies that are manufacturing these products. And not only that, they can simply avoid the whole thing by sending the materials to one of their subsidiary corporations outside of China and assembling the Chinese components at an outside location, like, say, Mexico. And then they're Mexican solar panels and not Chinese, and therefore the tariff would not apply. It's no wonder that the situation is what it is globally when you have all of these ignorant economic central planning fiascos taking place. You truly need a computer with a built-in scorecard system just to keep track of who is charged what and when and all the various rules that apply. And ladies and gentlemen, a subsidy is simply the government taking your money out of your pocket at gunpoint and giving it to a company so that they can presumably sell you a product at a lower price or at a competitive market price. You're still paying for it. It's absolute insanity. It's foolishness on a vast scale. And I see the embassy issue is still heating up, as I suspected it would. And we see the Clintons and the Obamas pointing fingers. Why can't we have a government official stand up and simply take responsibility? Wouldn't that be refreshing to have a president like Truman, the buck stops here? And say, look, ultimately, this was my responsibility. It's more than an oversight when it costs American lives. It's more than just an oversight. It's inexcusable. So we'll see what happens, what comes out of this. But truly, I doubt that much will come from it. There'll be a lot of hoopla, a lot of finger pointing, a lot of arguing and bickering back and forth. But in the end, I doubt very seriously if you'll see anyone held accountable at any level at all. You know, there might be some scolding or some public outcry. They may even lose their job. My God, they'll have to go on their pension early. What a tragedy. It just all becomes so tiresome watching this never-ending game that's being played at our expense. And I have to question when the ideas came about, when it became acceptable, this whole central economic planning and just the plain foolishness that goes on in Washington, D.C., and quite honestly, at our own local city councils. You know, all of this Agenda 21 and everything else that's being perpetrated. Who in the hell thought this was a good idea? And we need to be asking these questions. We need to be attending our local political meetings and asking them, just as Miss Linda Sills has been doing out in California, and doing a wonderful job, I might add. You just have to question. And you have to question daily. You know, whenever they have a meeting, and it's difficult to do, especially if you're a working stiff like a lot of us are. And so we rely on folks like Linda and others who are retired or not working to get out there and do the job for us because we're too busy trying to pay the tax man and keep food on the table. And it really is a catch-22 for a lot of us. It's just an impossible situation and easy to become discouraged, disenfranchised, and just simply give up. And we can't allow that to happen either. We need to stay engaged and informed as much as possible. If anybody has anything that they want to talk about, anything that's on their mind, you're certainly welcome to call in. Our call-in number is 646-378-0321. Again, that's 646-378-0321. And, you know, I welcome everyone's opinion or their viewpoint, any kind of questions, pretty much any topic. I'm open to discussion for, within reason. We want to keep it decent and clean, family-oriented. It is Patriot Families, and we are truly a family. We've had a great bunch of folks, and I've seen over the last 6-8 months, our activity has really tapered off. And I know that a lot of folks are doing what Miss Linda's doing. They're out there working hard. They're campaigning. They're canvassing. They're manning phone banks and that kind of thing. And it takes up a lot of time. But I also think that a lot of the inactivity on our website of late is simply due to people throwing their hands up in frustration at feeling that they've not made a difference or that things aren't moving quickly enough. Kind of a what's the use, you know, why bother? But you truly do get a tremendous education in the system and in the processes, how it all actually works at the ground level when you get involved. And if nothing else, it should give you a better appreciation of exactly how things are done behind the scenes and how things are manipulated, and truly by a majority, even if it's a small majority, if that makes any sense to you. Doesn't necessarily have to be a majority of, you know, 50 out of 51. But we certainly have the opportunity to get involved and be influential. And we, you know, if you're not involved and if you have not been involved, things like what occurred during our Republican National Convention, while it might be somewhat obvious what occurred on the surface, unless you're really down in the trenches and you understand the entire process, I think a lot gets lost on the layman out there that hasn't been involved. And then, of course, we get tagged as conspiracy theorists when we talk about, you know, how one administration or one campaign has used dirty tricks against another. And, you know, I'm not just touting the Ron Paul folks. It happened to many Santorum supporters and others who were wholly disenfranchised. And if it's any indication of what a Mitt Romney administration will be run like, well, then, you know, it just lives up to my expectations of a Romney administration. And while I'm on the topic of Mitt Romney, I'd like any of you out there to call in and tell me why you think Mitt Romney will be better than Barack Obama, other than the fact that he's not Barack Obama. And it looks like we have Miss Linda on the line. What's on your mind, Miss Linda?
Hey, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. I've been one busy camper here. You know, since they won't hire me, I just go out and I fight the best I can. So I did my two-hour online training a few days ago for the poll working. I'm actually an assistant inspector. I did the 2 hours today in class, hands-on, you know, the whole nine yards with opening and closing the polls. And I think that what I put in the chat room is, you know, what Ben Franklin alluded to, and I said it takes a lot of work to keep a republic. And people don't realize that. And this is why we are where we are today.
Eternal vigilance.
And if, you know, even if you only have 2 or 3 hours a week to do something, you're going to feel so much more emboldened because you're a part of it. You're doing something. You're not just sitting on the couch watching PMS LSD and drinking it like it was manna from heaven. And I've said that before, but it's the truth. That's what my libtard friends do. And I try to reach out to them, but I don't know. Sometimes they get it. Sometimes they don't.
Well, and you know, that's something you should have told that woman when she asked you the question about supporting Romney or whatever. You should have told her, well, you know, it would probably be in your best interest to give me a job, because then I wouldn't have all this time to fight against you. You'd have made her think with that one, I can promise you.
Yeah, for about 5 seconds, because I don't think she has much to think with. But anyway. She's
a
dyed-in-the-wool, you know, socialist, obviously. Always tell. When you're acting like you're in the old Soviet and you're going to prevent someone from getting a job because of the way they vote, that's pretty sad.
I don't know how far you are from Sacramento or San Jose.
Oh, it's a long ways, yeah. Oof. I'm almost to the border of Mexico, so it's a long. And I know I saw that. That was great.
Yeah, Joe Bannister is from California.
Cool.
And he was a CPA who got a job with the Internal Revenue Service, and he's what they called a CID agent, which is a Criminal Investigation Division.
Wow.
So, I mean, he was carrying a gun and a badge and, you know, busting bad guys, but so he thought. And he's kind of changed his tune. He was asked to resign. They asked him to resign, but he wrote a report and raised some questions, and they told him that it would be best for him to just resign.
Wow.
And then Larry Beecraft will be there, and I think I forwarded links to his website previously.
Great.
Larry is a great guy. I met him in Atlanta, and just a down-to-earth guy. You won't find him more. He's slow-spoken, got the southern drawl, always a gentleman, but very sharp, very sharp. So
wow.
if it's somewhere in the neighborhood where you could get to it, it would be a worthwhile experience.
Yeah, it's just too far, and I'm trying to save money because I know that the coming meltdown is happening, and I figure if I can save a little bit and go to Vegas one more time before I'll
You know, they used to,
I'm gonna
they
do it.
Used to, you could get paid in silver dollars in Vegas, but I understand they don't do that anymore.
Oh, God, they don't even have the coins dropping out anymore. It makes me crazy. They've done themselves a huge disservice. However, when you talk about Mitt Romney, you probably have not had time to go back in the archives from last Friday on my show. The gentleman who, you remember when he was on a few weeks ago and he was debating for 3 hours about 9/11? And
yes.
He called himself the pilot or one angry
Jew, yes.
Yeah, he was on, I think it was Friday with the Hot Seat Show this week. Right. And he was talking about, he's the one that wants to go back to Thailand and get the heck out of here. And he says even if Mitt gets in, because he knows that there's no difference much between the two. He says, if Barack gets in, he says, you guys are in, you know, you're in for Venezuela. And he says, I have friends who do business in Venezuela. It's hell on earth. It is damn close to the scorched earth policies of Stalin, because there are people who used to have life insurance and cars and houses, and they were middle class. They're living in tents.
Well,
so that's the big difference. Because this is the only difference I see, is one absolutely hates this country, and the other one will just keep the status quo.
Yeah, and I think you have to, you know, from my point of view at least, I look at it in the light that, you know, it doesn't really matter which one of them is in the Oval Office, so to speak. They're going to follow the agenda.
Right.
Period. I mean, they're just, it's going to happen. You know, I don't know if there's anything that Romney can be blackmailed with or not, but I'm sure there is, or I don't believe he'd be in the running.
Well, they haven't come up with anything other than the haircut and the dog on the top of the car. I mean, if that's all they got.
Well, right, but that's just your usual rhetoric. But you know, that's one thing that I've seen with the mosquito class is that they always like to have something to hold over everyone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that they can manipulate you.
Well, if they don't have any real dirt, then they'll do what they did to people like Reagan or whomever.
Sure.
They had plenty to hold JFK, but they just shot at Reagan a couple of times, but they actually took the other one out. So,
well,
I mean, these guys know that they're under the death threat when they're in that White House. Are you kidding me?
Well, exactly. And, I mean, you know, I don't – of course, I think ideologically there is certainly a difference – between the
mm-hmm.
two. But my question goes more to the point of, why is Mitt Romney good for America? What is it that he's going to bring to the table we've been lacking in previous administrations?
I don't think he's going to bring anything new, because they're still steeped in this 130-year-old, you know, central planning nonsense and the Federal Reserve and all the rest of it. And tax everybody and spend till you're, you know, you're sick and blue in the face. So, no, that's not going to change. But the only thing that it would bring is for me to take a breath once in a while and be able to then fight harder to go the way we really want to go. Because with I'll be in a FEMA camp within 2 years.
Well,
that's my difference.
But I think we have to ask the question, okay? I hear what you're saying, and that's largely what I hear from everyone in one form or another, is that, well, he's not Barack Obama. His ideology is different. He loves America. He's going to be good for America. But with Obama, those of us that, you know, have our eyes open and don't have our heads in our southern posterior, we know exactly who Obama is and what
mm-hmm.
he is. With Romney, is it possible that you take the Tea Party out of the equation entirely? you silence them because they believe they have a friend in the White House now.
Well, that's kind of where I was coming from when I was speaking on Mike's show and saying that if Romney gets in, we have to, like, go crazy even more. We have to be more emboldened and more loud and more bigger steamroller to push back against this stuff. Because anybody like you and Patriot Families and people who are kind of like-minded, who understand who Ron Paul is and his whole ideology of the Jeffersonian thought, not going to stop. I think we should just get louder, as long as we can, and wake everybody up.
That's my biggest issue in this whole thing with Romney. I mean, aside from the Mormonism and all of that junk, which is a whole different, to me, that's a personal agenda kind of thing. But Romney would allegedly or presumably legitimize the central economic planning, the monetary system
sure.
as it stands,
sure.
and at least give it the appearance of legitimacy, which I think will undermine much of the progress that's been made against the Federal Reserve System and the central economic planning. It wouldn't take much.
Yeah.
I think that people are so desperate to believe in something, anything, that you get a Romney in there and we see an uptick in the market and we see gas prices go down. And, we're off to the races again, and the balloon is going to be inflated at an ever-increasing speed.
Right.
And everyone will just be lulled right back to sleep. And that's the fear that I have in it.
Okay. I'm hoping that with people like me and my groups out here, I mean, I'm not kidding. Some of these guys I've met over the last 3 or 4 years, they're on fire. They're not sitting back. These guys.
Sure.
I went to a class today. There had to be, this time there was probably 30 people there. In the primary, there was only maybe 10. So people are pretty well fed up, whether they know what they need to know or not. At least they're getting out and they're doing something. And I'm talking all ages. I sat next to a girl that had to be 22 years old today. I mean, so we had all ages in there. And it was absolutely amazing. Everywhere I go, there's more things going on. People are making handmade signs on the propositions. They're doing everything they can. We have Tea Party people here that are just very, very Ron Paulian. I think the Tri-City Tea Party, which is one of the largest ones now, that's all they talked about. They were talking about principles. They got it. And that's why I hang out with these people. You know, they're not stupid. They've probably read as much as I have. So... You know, it's the leaders have, and
sure. It's
astounding. There's many, of course, but at least they're there and they're getting, some of it may rub off, thank God, on them, because they keep coming back.
And I think that's been the positive influence that Ron Paul has had.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy for a Ron Paul to have that kind of impact, but it was made easier by the situation, everything around us, and I mean,
yes.
he's been talking about this stuff for 30
for years.
Plus years.
Absolutely.
And now that it's coming to fruition, well, it makes it a lot easier to sell. And especially when you have, archive footage, you can go back to 10, 15 years ago where he's warning about a housing bubble and these kind of things.
The other
thing is that I think a lot of quote unquote conservatives or right-wing people, for a lack of a better term to place on them, were converted to the Ron Paul ideology because they saw the reality of what he was saying. I mean, the truth was patently obvious.
Right.
You put somebody in there like a Romney and things look good for even a short span of time. Those minds are going to become absolutely closed. You will not make one inch of headway with those people.
Right.
It'll be like trying to preach to the dyed-in-the-wool socialist progressives.
It's
just not going to happen.
But I think because of the way things are and the way that, that if Lindsay Williams is correct and at the end of this year it goes south, I know that there are some are stupid enough to blame the Republicans or Romney or whatever. And it goes back so many years. I mean, we can't even blame completely Obama, although he's just a Marxist because he walks, quacks, talks, and, you know, moves like one. But the only difference is that if Obama gets back in, then I think within 2 years, you won't have to send me one of those clips because they'll take my gun. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying to you. This
sure.
is the fear that I have, and I'm trying to keep my keep away from the cognitive dissonance, which I looked up in the book the other day. It's amazing. And again, I think that's part of my plan is if he gets in, that not only will I write him a 3-page letter, probably won't do any good, but it'll help me feel better. And then just go out and just keep sounding the alarm. I'm not putting down my bullhorn. I mean, I got to keep fighting and keep telling him, look, he's in. Now's our time. This is the time now for us to do our Solilinsky on the rest of these clowns. You know?
Absolutely. Well, and yeah. I guess the point I'm trying to make in a roundabout way or trying to sneak up on it is I think if we look back through our history at the changes that have occurred over time within our society and within our governing structure,
mm-hmm.
You know, it was easier to push through certain legislation, certain rules or bans under a Republican mm-hmm. than it is under a Democrat and vice versa. You know, the Republicans will push through the quote-unquote
yeah.
Republican agenda, and they'll get flack from the Democrats, but the majority of quote-unquote conservatives will be on the bandwagon
sure.
because it's their party, just like, you know,
right.
let's all get behind Mitt Romney because he's our party guy, you know, kind of deal. And
right.
that's been our undoing for many decades. And I believe we have Mr. Robert on the line with us. How are you, Mr. Robert?
Mr. Ron, how you doing? Mr. Miller,
hey,
how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I'm hanging in there.
Robert, I'm sorry, I have a new nickname for you, and I think it should be your screen name on the computer.
What is that?
It's after a hamburger sandwich that you can get at Wendy's. The
Baconator.
No, the Baconator.
The Baconator?
Yes.
You're so funny.
Oh.
The Baconator. You
can get that as a personal tag down there in Florida. Baconator.
Speaking of Baconators, there's a lot of Baconators at USF. You know why?
Why is that?
I was listening to FBR radio station, which is affiliated with WUSF, right? FBR?
Is that Nazi Public Radio?
Yeah. The one.
USF all over the state of Florida had their USF straw poll, right? Just like, you know, the straw poll in Iowa, right?
Uh-huh.
And USF voted, the whole school of USF voted for Barack Obama and Joe Biden, 67%, and Romney got 33%. And when I heard that, Ron Golden, I said, I graduated from a socialistic university.
Did you stand up and break into a chorus of God Bless America?
No, I started singing Hava Tequila.
Oh, my God. That's funny.
Started singing Hava Tequila, Hava, Hava to Israel, and going to die there. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my God. That really made my day, Ron.
I'll bet. I'll bet it did.
I went totally ballistic. I just basically, when I heard that, Ron, I just said to myself, I spent over $20,000 in that school, and received my BA degree, like I, you know, like you, you know. Then I hear how John Stossel thinks that a college education is stupid.
Well, you know, I wanted to change gears a little bit and talk about one of my favorite topics, which is economics. And, you know, just watching what's going on, and of course, Linda mentioning Mr. Williams talking about December being a pivotal month, you realize that a recent IMF report says that European banks may need to sell off $4.5 trillion in assets over the next 14 months in order to comply with capital requirements.
Good grief.
Well,
and
they're looking at Portugal right now. That's why.
During the week ending, now this is interesting, during the week ending October 3rd, investors pulled out more than $10 billion from U.S. mutual funds.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Overall, a total of more than $100 billion has been pulled out of mutual funds thus far this year in the U.S. That's a lot of money being yanked out of mutual funds. That leaves a very large gap.
Yeah, where are those mutual funds? Where are they going to, Ron?
Well, they're going somewhere other than the United States, you know.
Go ahead, Linda. I'm sorry.
I was just saying that you mentioned on the top of the show that talking about the central planning and especially the central economic planning, when you go with people like either Milton Friedman, Ayn Rand Center, the John Locke's of the world, the Hayek's and the von Mises, you know, they explain very simply what was going on at the time, where the school of thought comes from. This comes from the old Marxist theory, you know, of planning everything and total redistribution of wealth. It's
sure.
Socialism.
It absolutely is.
Road to Serfdom was written in the early 30s. I mean, this has been going on for a long time.
Sure has.
And then Europe took hold of it. You know, the progressives got a hold of it, and they says, oh, this is great. Yeah, we can do this. And, of course, this country's been, it's been going on here. Oh, my gosh. Probably before the 30s. When they started this.
Well, you know, I read another interesting article on the subject of money the other day, and I don't know if anybody ran across it. I think, at least from my own perception, it probably went largely unnoticed. But there was a new batch of $100 bills printed up.
Oh, gosh.
They are not intended to be in circulation until 2013.
Whoa.
Oh, Lord.
New design of $100 bills that on the back has a big gold 100 embossed on the bill.
Oh, my gosh.
And it seems that from the time they left the New York Fed on their way to another bank between point A and point B, like $2.5 million worth of them are missing.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there reading the story, and I'm like, okay, so somebody on the inside snagged $2.5 million of these new $100 bills, but to me the bigger story is the new $100 bill.
Yeah, why?
A redesign, and, you know, Lindsey Williams stated many times, I've heard it, and I believe that's probably true, is that the new currency is going to be gold-backed. That's something that was talked about for the euro. And
sure.
It's something that makes sense if you're going to start a new currency that is going to be widely accepted rather than it just being backed by the by the U.S. government's ability to force everyone in the world to buy oil with their money or their treasury bonds, that the new currency is going to have some kind of underpinning for all the other nations to get on board with the idea. And, of course, you know, the gold standard or a gold standard of some sort is the perfect solution, which would also explain why we see a lot of the central banks around the world buying up a lot of gold.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know where the money went.
And I think the 2013 circulation date may also be very telling in light of the other evidence that we've heard.
I have an assumption.
What's that, Robert?
Bernanke and Geithner got their hands on it.
Well, I mean, they wouldn't have to steal it en route. I mean, they could just simply have some.
Print it.
I mean,
yeah,
it's
just
not...
print more.
Well,
yeah.
You know.
Well,
you find it. You
know,
find that story.
Okay, explain to me. Okay, we've got the petrodollar. We've got all these entanglements since Christ was a carpenter in the Middle East because of the oil. Explain to me why. Well, I guess I'm answering my own question, but we are so rich in natural resources in this country, and they keep pushing this clean energy nonsense, but it's not ready. There's nothing, it's not going to work. Why can't we, you know, eliminate all this nonsense, get the government out of the way, and have our own oil and our own shale and coal and all that stuff?
Well, we can, and there's nothing wrong with the, you know, with developing our own resources. The difference, I think, that we have to look at now, today, is I think there's a false assumption that if we would only just drill our own oil wells and produce our own oil, that everything would be perfect and kumbaya, or that our prices would go down. But that assumes a lot. Number one, you know, if we just take a look at, let's say, here in the United States, let's say there's just one oil company, okay? There's only one. They've got a monopoly on all oil production, just to make things simple.
Okay.
And, you know, if that company is making a profit, and we'll say their profit is, we'll assume 2% at the current price of crude oil,
mm-hmm.
Okay? If the price goes down, what happens to their profits?
Okay.
Their profits go down. All
what about,
again.
What about the supply and the demand, though?
I mean,
if you're supplying so much, and everybody's out there driving cars and needing, you know, fuel for their house to heat.
Well, that would be a very good look. That would be a very good economic study to undertake. If we look at the global consumption daily of crude oil,
okay,
versus the global production of crude oil, that's not to say that there wouldn't be a higher demand if you produced more oil. Well, there's so many factors that factor
right
into this, but a company is not going to do what China was being accused of doing with the solar panels, and that is shoot themselves in the foot, okay,
uh-huh,
by producing so much product that they outrun demand. And they flood the market with oil, driving the prices down, which would, one would believe, increase demand. So it's a very complex
right. How did
situation.
when I was like a young teenager, the price at the pump of gas was 35 cents.
Well, you also have to factor in the purchasing power of your dollar at that time.
Okay.
We know that this is one of the problems when we get into economics. Okay. Matter
right
of fact, an article I was just reading about a Nobel Prize for a couple of guys here in the U.S. in their work in economics. One of the things that economics professors and teachers will always say, or one thing that you'll read oftentimes, is that all other things being equal, if A happens, then B will do this, if all other things are equal. But all other things are never equal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the problems in trying to apply mathematical precision and laws
right.
to economics. It just doesn't work that way.
Right.
There's too many factors that come into the mix that you can't possibly account for all of.
That's why the central planning never works, because they can't
it's
account
too complicated.
For all of
right.
it. Yes.
There is not one single man nor group of men or men
exactly.
and women
exactly.
that can effectively calculate and account for every possibility.
No,
they can't even account for their own buying habits and spending habits, much less those of, 6 billion people. It's just not plausible. And that's where the problem comes in. But we do know there are some fairly obvious trends that we can follow. And so, as a company, and especially with government regulations and all the other things that go into it, the reason, and I haven't heard anyone discussing this. I heard Glenn today talking about the fact that if we didn't have the oil resources developed that we're currently using in the United States, we would be paying ungodly amounts
right.
for fuel. And I think he's correct in that. But there's an obverse side or a flip side to that coin.
Okay.
If oil prices were not where they are at currently, those oil reserves would never have been developed in the first place. The reason that they're being developed at this time is because it's profitable to do so. If the price of oil drops to $48 a barrel, it's no longer profitable to go through the expense and the cost of extracting that oil through fracking and all the additional things that have
right.
to occur, no matter how much oil is down there. I mean, yes, at some point you get to a break even, okay, and then you start making a profit. But these companies, they operate on a window, okay,
sure.
and they have to look at it and say, okay, we know that once we develop this well, it's going to take 6 months of production at X level before we begin to see a profit.
Okay.
We can do that. If it takes 9 months, we can't do it. We can't carry the loan that long.
Right. So all things, since we know that we've got 320 million people, we've got individuals who most of us, or some of us, think outside the box, and we have some independent thought, not counting the thing in the White House. But, no one can predict what the market would do. Let's say, for example, even with those bends and twists and turns in daily life from 1 year to the next or one decade to the next, and we had none of this BS government intervention, which never was envisioned by the founders, and we really had a pure capitalistic system and a free market, which we haven't seen since way before my mother was born, wouldn't that be better than what's going on now?
Well, I would have to say that I certainly wouldn't mind giving it a try.
Hell yeah.
I cannot come up with a plausible reason why it would be any worse than what we've done over the past 80-plus years.
My God.
I mean, we've proven over the last 80 years that we can place the country in massive amounts of debt.
Oh,
that results in nothing less than abject slavery, okay, where your whole livelihood is dependent on the largesse and benevolence of your government.
Exactly.
Sure would be nice to try freedom for a change.
Oh, I absolutely agree. We know this doesn't work. We see the results of it. We're sick of it. And I do credit the demise of our freedom, mainly, like Ron Paul does, to that stupid Federal Reserve System.
We don't even have to, and that's the thing, and I try to shy away from it as much as possible, and I know Michael gets upset with that, but you don't even have to go into the Rothschilds and the conspiratorial end of things
right.
to just say, well, let's take a simple, logical look at the numbers, because math doesn't lie.
No, it doesn't.
And there's no agenda in mathematics. 1 + 1 = 2, and it doesn't matter what agenda, what religion you follow, it's still 2. And so if we just look at it from a very pragmatic standpoint, Keynesian economic theory and central economic planning has been an abject failure.
Well, it just creates misery and slavery, and that's why we're where we are today.
Well,
I mean,
see, here's the other side. Here's the flip side of that coin. The cheerleaders for Keynesian economic theory and central economic planning would argue that it's been a smashing success.
For them?
Sure, because it has allowed government expansion at a breakneck pace, and it didn't put any burden or restrictions on government whatsoever. I mean, look at all that government has been able to achieve and thus establish itself as a necessary component of your life.
It's statism.
Because without government, none of these things would have been possible. My God. We wouldn't be able to feed the poor and give them medical care and send a man to the moon and all these other things without free government, free reign of government, without any restrictions or limitations.
Well, you know, let's go to the other side of that coin or down that road. How many totalitarian evils have been perpetrated by a tiny, limited government? Zero?
Exactly. But, you know, we're weeding those out slowly but surely, and that's probably the purpose of the United Nations, you see.
Oh, God.
To use the collective superpower government's power to subdue those would-be upstarts, you know, so that we don't end up with another Adolf Hitler.
Right.
So, Ron.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you a question. Hypothetically, if Romney gets elected and the first day he's in office, the second day he has a press conference, everybody's listening, and he says, I hate to tell you this, boys and girls, we had declared bankruptcy. Would you be for it?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how the United States government would go about declaring bankruptcy. So that's a pretty big hypothetical question. Would I be in favor of it? Possibly. It depends on, you know, what it looks like. But in the end, I don't think it's really going to matter. I truly believe that still to this day, I believe that what you're going to see in one way, shape, form, or another is some kind of meeting of the minds of the economic superpowers of the world to say, look, you know, the system is really broken, and we've had to come together. We've got the top people in the world working on this, and we've come up with a solution. And it's going to be sold much like the TARP was sold.
Yep.
It's an emergency. We have to do this to stave off worldwide chaos and anarchy and a total collapse of the monetary system around the globe. I mean, this is do or die, ladies and gentlemen. And they're going to introduce a new reserve currency. It's going to be a reset of sorts.
Yes, never let a manufactured crisis go to waste.
Well, precisely, and whether it was manufactured intentionally or purely out of just haphazard ignorance really doesn't matter, does it?
No, because it's a mess. Well, I want to tell Robert that on election night, whoever wins, there will be heavy drinking involved, I'm sure.
Well, there's another hypothetical.
I couldn't hear.
There's another hypothetical that's being discussed with increasing frequency, and that is that Mitt Romney wins and he's inaugurated, and his first day in office he makes an announcement that due to the civil unrest and violence that has broken out across the country after the presidential election. They're going to have to institute some kind of curfew, and you know they will avoid a term like martial law at all costs. But you know, we laugh, but it's certainly a plausible scenario. And again, that goes back to what I was talking about earlier, that you will find a good number of gun owners in the country mm-hmm. who are conservative would be more willing to give up some of those rights under a Republican president if there was a situation that they felt warranted, you know, some kind of action, even though they may not agree with it in theory or principle, in light of the Constitution, you know, circumstances dictate that this is necessary, and you know, for to safeguard our freedoms.
Oh boy, I've at least my car is a convertible. I just need a better bullhorn, because I will not put up with that. Oh my God. Oh, that's awful. Well, yeah, no, I understand your fear, because you're right. I mean, I've seen it over and over again. You have too, because you've been studying this for like 15, 20 years, and I'm trying to catch up. Yeah, the complacency is what's done it. I mean, I know Franklin warned of it. Yeah, and he looks very sternly and says, "Yes, madam, a republic, if you can keep it." Ugh.
Right.
Why? They don't listen. Oh, why they don't listen. I don't.
Well, you know, some of the photos that I put up last night during the show, and I don't know if you were able to see. The one is the little news flyer newsletter that I told you I was going to scan. I scanned it in there.
Okay. Cool.
And of course, it's so small in that picture, you probably can't read it. But you know, I just remember seeing that the week after the election. And I thought to myself, wow, that didn't take them long, did it? I mean, this thing had to be, it was the week of November 13th through the 19th, 2008. So they had to print these things up and then get them distributed out to all the various Starbucks locations. And I'm presuming that logistically that probably took a little while. Which leads me to believe that these were printed up beforehand in anticipation of an Obama presidency.
Oh yeah.
And Robert, for your edification, it's a little I call it a communist rag. It's called GOOD. It's www.good.is/. And this was publication number 10. And back in 2008, just a week after the presidential election or so, I was at my local Starbucks and I saw it sitting on the counter in a little tray, you know, with a bunch of them. And I thought, isn't that interesting? The title is GOOD. And then underneath that, it says National Service, with a red emblem with two shovels crossed like crossbones.
Yep.
And it says, "What can you do for your country?"
Shovel ready jobs.
Yeah, absolutely. you're 100% correct.
Well, we know what shovel ready means, because we have to get the fertilizer out of the mound.
And if you look up I'm sure you could find a copy or a picture of this on the back covers. How can you make a difference today? Faced with global issues such as poverty, genocide, and climate change, it's easy to feel powerless. We want to do good and change the world, but it's easy to be paralyzed by the fear that individuals can't make a significant impact. Awareness. Bold capital letters. Inspiring stories about how to make a difference is a wake-up call, a call to action to volunteerism, and to each and every person's unique ability to help build a better world. And there is a picture of this book, I guess it is, Awareness, 86 essays with contributions by. And it's again, the cover is red. There's a seat, there's a crowd of people, and there's one black militant looking guy with a bullhorn and a raised fist in the air.
Oh, Black Panthers.
And it says 86 essays with contributions by Lance Armstrong, Bon Jovi, Don Shield, Bill Clinton, Mario Cuomo, Melissa Etheridge, Mia Farrow, Jane Fonda, Magic Johnson, Robert Kennedy Jr., Martin Luther King III, Norman Lear, Ludacris,
Elias Jesse Jackson, me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this thing is just, guys, I'm telling you, this was, to me, it was amazing that this was.
Oh yeah,
and there's well, let's see, want to live and work in developing countries in an effort to promote peace.
Want to
work with the State Department to represent American interests abroad and to provide support to Americans living in foreign countries. Want to work with local social organizations and government agencies on volunteer projects.
Acorn.
Join the Peace Corps. Join the Foreign Service. Join AmeriCorps. Join Senior Corps.
Oh, jeez. Marxism on parade. Oh, my God. Yeah. All these guys are intertwined, and I've seen this in so many different websites and uncovered all of this stuff. These globalists, these, you know, bleeding heart fascists, I call them. I mean, this is what's going on. It's been going on for a long time. But then they said, oh, we got a golden opportunity here. We can use the race card, and we get this half-black, half-white clown, you know, up there with a teleprompter. Couldn't speak without one because he stutters every time he tries. I mean, look at that first debate. Now, I guess tomorrow night there's going to be another theater. It's unbelievable. Yeah, they selected him. And remember that meeting? They told Hillary, no, this isn't your turn. And they pushed him through. And John McShane, that's all we got? He threw it. Talk about throwing a fight. Oh, my God. First punch, he was out. He did it. I knew he did it on purpose. I knew. I was uneasy about him. Every time I heard interviews on the campaign trail, he acted like it was no big deal. And, I mean, it was just, it was pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. So, in retrospect, I know that they did it. That it was all set up. Boy, were we set up.
Well, it'll be interesting. And speaking of the debate, did you see Memorandum of Understanding? Regarding the debate and the rules of the debate. And I guess Candy Crowley has got her thong in a wad over the Memorandum of Understanding because she's being kind of held up to a high standard by both the Obama and the Romney campaign to follow the rules.
Oh,
and
God.
And, of course, she's
funny.
An avowed Obama supporter.
Oh,
and,
that's funny.
You know, said that the Romney-Ryan pairing was a death match or death wish.
Well, she controlled that debate all the way through, Ron. I watched it three or four times.
Oh, no. That's different moment.
Night.
This is the debate coming up tomorrow night. Candy
tomorrow
Crowley.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
And
no,
see,
the
deal is that during this upcoming debate, it's going to be a town hall forum. And according to the memorandum of understanding between the two campaigns, there won't be any input from the moderator. There won't be any follow-up questions by the moderator.
Oh my God.
There won't be any, you know, the moderator's not supposed to say, well, what about this or what about that? Or, you know, she's not supposed to interject anything. She's supposed to allow the audience to ask the question, the candidates to give a response, and then move on to the next question without her sticking her nose in it. And she's saying that's just not going to happen.
Oh, wow.
The other interesting thing is that she has to pre-approve all the questions.
Oh, my God.
So while we have this theater going on tomorrow night,
Christ.
If you tune in to watch the debate, I want you to bear in mind that all the people that are asking questions have already been pre-screened, and their questions are asked before the debate happens.
Right.
Okay, so it's not some spontaneous town hall thing. It's theater.
Yes, it is. It's contrived. Oh,
it is
absolutely
ridiculous.
It's contrived. Here's the thing. I don't know if you watched Biden Box of Rocks against...
I did not.
Paul Rhino. But anyway, one of the guys, I call him Paul Rhino now instead of Ryan. But one of the guys who came on the next day after this debacle, he says he was laughing and joking, and his name's Roger Hedgecock. I got a hat tip for this because he was funny. He says, Joe Biden starring in The Shining was great because he acted like Jack Nicholson with the axe. It was hysterical. Unbelievable. Absolutely,
you know,
unbelievable.
It's entertaining to me to listen to the cheerleaders on both sides of the aisle justifying why their guy won. It's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical.
To me, it's almost sad and a puke fest because there's no justification for any of this. I mean, Biden lies. Biden was doing Sololinsky the whole time. You know, if you can't run on your record, you have to, you know, attack, vilify, laugh, mock, whatever. And I'm sure he got a few points in there that were accurate when he went after Ryan. But I'll tell you, if it was me sitting on that seat, Joe Biden would be praying. He would be praying that it wasn't me, because there was four or five opportunities that Paul had, and he didn't take them to go after him on several things. But that's just me. So,
I think Romney is playing the meek, mild, you know, I'm not going to get down in the gutter and sling mud with you. I'm just going to stick with the facts kind of thing. And it played well with women. During the Biden-Ryan debate. And I understand why that is. You know, most women, I'm learning, it's... Truly, we were having this discussion in my household the other night, and I've never read the book, but I'm sure it is so close to perfection, and that is Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus.
Yep.
We think differently.
Right.
See, women are absolutely certain 99% of the time that men say the things they say just to piss off the women. And men are absolutely certain that women do and say the things they do just to piss off the men, just to see if they can aggravate them, because they have nothing better to do. I mean, seriously, I see it. I've never really sat and thought about it much, but I've had opportunity to reflect on it, and it's so very true. And our thought process, the way that we approach solving a problem, is completely different. Our motivations for problem solving are totally different.
Aren't you glad?
Yes, I am. Yeah,
she,
I mean,
she,
I am.
She helped to keep us from. Aren't you glad?
Absolutely. I am... wonderfully happy that there is a vast difference between men and women. But there has to
be... Merlin, you're so funny.
There has to be a way...
Right,
yeah, there's got to be a way where we can find the ability to dialogue without it descending into an argument. And see, this is one of the things that drives everyone apart. And it's not on a bigger scale... If we look at a left-right paradigm, it's much the same.
Sure.
If you take gender out of the equation for a moment.
Yeah, because, I mean, I can descend into argumentative deals politically with people of the same sex, and it happens all the time, believe me. So, you know, how they're thinking cognitive dissonantly, and I'm not, they suck up the news media, and I don't. You know, I do believe that you can absolutely teach a woman how to play chess and beat you. You know, there's nothing wrong with their brains. We are wired differently. Yes, maybe we come to our right.
Absolutely.
Left.
And,
yeah.
You know,
so it's not intelligence.
No, it's not intelligence. It's our approach to life. And I think men,
okay.
I think men, by and large, and this is a slam on women, but I think by and large, the majority of men try to approach a problem.
Mm-hmm.
From a logical, you know, reasoning aspect. And women, more often than not, tend to approach it from an emotional standpoint.
Got to hand it to you there.
And
but.
I think a lot of the women that I know that are, excuse me, successful
mm-hmm.
in the area that we're talking about, you know, and doing research and reaching conclusions, like yourself, have had a change in the way they think. They've learned to put emotion aside for a minute and look at it and say, well, wait a minute. And
you know
so
what?
It's transformative.
I think that's why so many juries have a problem, because even some of the men don't have deductive reasoning.
Sure.
Thank God my dad taught me that at a young age, and, you know, how to problem solve, how to absolutely, completely, totally, and easily comprehend what you're reading on a page. That is, to me, more valuable than a pot of gold, because
I have to give my wife all the credit in the world for pointing these things out to me, not with discussions between her and I, but
right.
With my stepmother, Barbara. Her and I have had many discussions, and she gets upset with me because she thinks that I'm attacking her personally.
Oh.
And that's the emotional side of things, that it's not a personal attack. It's certainly not. I'm just trying to drive at the facts. One of the things that that I do that aggravates people of both sexes is I interrupt them. But there's a purpose and a reason. There's a purpose and a reason behind it. If you make a statement
right.
that you know, I don't believe is accurate.
Well, probably false.
And I immediately see a gap in what you're stating. If I wait until you're done making your complete statement 20 minutes later, I've completely forgotten that point.
I know.
So I want to make it while it's still fresh in your mouth and
sure.
on my mind that, hey, wait a minute, that's not true. You can't state that as an absolute, and here's why. You know,
mm-hmm.
So let's solve the issues as they arise, one at a time, working towards
sure.
the goal of reaching some kind of conclusion. I think that's the correct way to approach it. But people get offended because they think I'm trying to cut them off and beat them up, and that's just not the case.
Yeah, what you should do at the outset is say, this isn't personal.
Well, sure.
Before we start, we're just trying to get at a logical conclusion.
Especially when it's a very closely held belief, you know?
Right.
Just like the other night when I got to reading, I thought, you know, what the hell do I know about the Electoral College? Very little. You know, I probably ought to learn a little more about it.
Sure.
And so, you know, I understand it a little better now. Not having been involved in the electoral process, I still don't fully comprehend it,
mm-hmm.
but I can see how, you know, it's open to manipulation. And
oh, yeah.
A lot of people would be disenfranchised. But, you know, one of the reasons that I even ventured into looking at that is Mike from the Hot Seat Left, because he put out the challenge, you know, where people were talking about, oh, if you vote for Gary Johnson or Ron Paul, you're going to split the ticket and give the election to Obama. And he said, well, you know, he got thinking about that, and so he did some research and found that Ross Perot got like 1% of the vote. Well, 1%
sure.
wasn't enough to split a damn thing.
It had zero impact. Yeah.
First of all, you would have to assume that every one of those 1%ers would have otherwise voted for the Republican that was running instead of Clinton. You can't
exactly.
make that assumption.
Yeah, because you don't know. There's
now,
no
you
way
know,
to
if,
know.
Right. If it came down to one electoral vote, was the difference the margin of victory? Well, then, and you know, if one guy got like, you know, just 21%, we'll say 31%, 33%, and 34% or whatever, then you could say, okay, well, you know, that guy really split the election. Well, he would have an impact at that point. But
right.
that wasn't
That's
the case.
Your number,
1%
yeah. right.
just wasn't, I mean, it's not even in the
not
ballpark.
Good.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not logical. So it's just blabber and nothing else.
Well, Mr. Ron, I brought my I just got an example ballot of my state, and for president and vice president, there's well, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Shoot, Roseanne Barr is on there. 11,
you go, boy.
12, 11, 12, and 13. So there's a write-in. Should I write my name in there?
Absolutely. Well, who are the names on the ballot? Come on, don't keep us in suspense.
Well, of course, Mitt Romney, Republican, Paul Ryan, Barack Obama, Democrat, Joe Biden. I don't know what the OBJ party is. I never heard of these, you know, guys. Have you? You know,
OBJ?
You know, yeah, OBJ. I guess that's other black jerks or maybe, I don't know. Thomas, Robert, Stevens, and Alden Link. The Liberty, LBT, Gary Johnson.
That's the Objectivist Party.
Objectivist Party. So Gary Johnson, LBT, and James P. Gray is his vice president. It's the CPF Party, Virgil H. Good Jr., James N. Silmer, the CPF Party. Jill Stein, the GRE party. That must be the Green Party, right?
Yeah.
Jill Stein and Sherry Hankala, the REF party, Andre Barrett and Kenneth Cross, the Social Party, I guess, SOC, Stuart Alexander and Alex Mendoza, PSL, Peter Lindsay, and Yari Osorio. I didn't even know these people were running, except for Roseanne Barr and Sidney Shannon and the AIP party, Tom Hoffling and Jonathan D. Ellis, the JPF party, Rossi Rocky Anderson. Ooh, Rocky. Louis J. Rodriguez for the JPF party. And that's it. And for United States Senator, we have, of course, Connie Mack, Republican, Bill Nelson, Democrat, Bill Gaylor.
Wait a minute. Now, the JPS party, is that the Jewish Puerto Rican Socialist Party?
Bad. Get you over to drive up to Atlanta, buy you a micro beer on that one.
That's a good
one. Oh, my
one.
God.
But, you know, just on your Objectivist Party, the history of the Objectivist Party, on February 2nd, 2008, Ayn Rand's birthday, Dr. Tom Stevens formed the Objectivist Party.
Oh, wow.
Is that the OBJ party?
Yes.
Okay. So I don't even know these people. I never even heard of them. I've only heard of Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Gary Johnson, and Roseanne Barr. The rest I never heard of.
Well, I have to say never Gary Johnson's vice presidential running mate, Mr. Gray, I have heard of him, but I don't know a lot about him.
Okay.
Have you heard any of the Gary Johnson ads?
I haven't.
Really?
No. There's no ads. No, not one ad from Gary Johnson in the state of Florida. I knew he was going to be from Fox News. I knew he was going to be on the ballot, but I wasn't quite sure.
Man, his ads are great. I wish he got more airtime with them. He's very sincere. He comes on and he says, I'm Gary Johnson,
and I'm running for
president under the Libertarian Party. He said, if you're tired of voting for the lesser of two evils, give me a shot. 4 years, that's all I'm asking. He said, for once, vote for the right reasons. Make your vote count. Vote for me, give me 4 years, and we can fix this.
Wow. I don't know what to do. I'm just like, the phones are ringing and my house dies every 15 minutes on the 15 minutes.
Well,
oh, yeah.
Robert, what you got to do is vote your conscience, sir.
I know. I've done it both full of, you know what, and I know what's, I know the handwriting was on the wall. I just have to keep on, you know, avoiding these, you know, what's and just do my own thing and not worry about it until I go broke.
that's
the only thing I'm worried about is just surviving. I'm barely making it, but I'm making it.
Yeah, we're gonna survive,
but,
all right. It's gonna be tough, and I know you're running out of time, but you guys.
No, I got 30 some odd minutes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh, you got plenty of time, because I thought you were, I forgot you started at 4:30. You know, as far as voting and understanding all this stuff, I mean, it's a huge task, but it is part of our responsibility. And if you don't know who we used to be and what we should have been and where we came from, how the hell are you going to figure out what you want to become, where you want the future to be? How? To me, it's an impossible task. You're in the cave. You can't.
Well, we didn't realize it, Linda. I mean, now that we realize it, maybe we have a chance. But
I hope so.
Maybe that's the old meaning of I saw the light. coming out of the cave.
Yep.
Oh, really?
I meet these guys every day. In fact, we have 535 of them in Congress. 34.
My father always said that to me. He says, when the hell are you going to see the light?
Yeah.
And now I know what he meant.
Well, Robert, if you haven't watched that little video, The Allegory of the Cave, you have to watch it.
I will.
It's on YouTube. And it just is such a simple, obvious explanation.
It's perfect, yeah. That's it.
And it was written in 380 BC, for goodness sakes.
Yep.
I need to go visit Frank. I haven't done that, and I am feeling very guilty. I need to go see him before the election.
You should feel guilty.
When
you go, you got to tell him that we all say hi and that we're still praying for him. We want him back on the air.
I need to go by and visit him to see if he needs a ride to go vote. I'll take him to go vote.
Hey, you tell him he needs to get his butt back on the air because I'm running out of stuff to talk about and I'm getting pretty damn boring.
Yeah, tell him that one too.
I don't know if I'm going back back next semester or not. I still haven't decided. I will know by the end of October whether or not I'm going back.
Robert, I think you've actually found your calling in life as a lifetime student.
Well, Kathy keeps me busy. You know, she keeps me busy. And let's switch the venue. This is how the healthcare system really stinks. Okay, you know, this neurologist up in Tampa scared the hell out of me. Said I had to be on oxygen, right?
Right.
What she did, right? She gave me oxygen, but she gave me the wrong amount of oxygen. I saw my family practitioner, and he saw the condition that I was in. He said she needed to be on 100% oxygen, and we're going to change your medicines because she gave you the wrong medicines. Both neurologists gave me the wrong medicines, you know. So, and then he checked my ear. I was complaining of an ear infection. My ear surgeon, my ENT man, said that I had to take out the cartilage out of my ear. He wanted to remove my cartilage. And my physician said, you tell your ear doctor, he's full of you know what, because you just need a good dose of penicillin to knock this stuff out. You might not need to even have anything done to your ear. So, you know, that's where our healthcare system is going to. You really have to be your own doctor, number one.
Yep.
Number two, you have to not only get one opinion or two opinions, you have to get three opinions of everything. You don't believe what one person tells you, number one, medically. And number two, if you don't do those things, you'll end up dying anyway. So it really doesn't matter. But, you know, these guys just give you the wrong information. It just, I've been struggling for this since undergraduate school.
Well, you can take any institution you want, whether it's anything that's supposed to be in the free market, and healthcare, education, whatever. And every time the damn government gets their little hands in it, they screw it up royally. They can mess up anything, and they do such a good job of it. That's why we got to get rid of them. They got to get out of our lives, out of our way, out of our bedrooms, out of our health care, out of all of it. It's disgusting. It was never meant to be this way. That's why I fight.
You know, I don't know if I told you this, but my neurologist in Venice, I said, would you hire me at my age in A, number one? Would you hire me at my age, and would you hire me knowing that I had this condition? And that bastard told me, excuse me, he said, number one, even if I had a title, and even if you could do the work, you are not useful in my office. That's exactly what he said to me.
Welcome to my world.
I said, thank you so much, you.
On a little bit different note, kind of going back to the presidential election, I put up a link to a pretty good article about the presidential election and the differences or lack thereof between the candidates. And I think it's really a very good article if you get a chance to read through it. It is fairly long, but not too awful long. And let's see, Romney, Ryan, Bush, Cheney on steroids. Let's see, Dan, you know, they're putting on promises simply consider some of the dangerous ultra hawk war criminals and unsavory individuals who are advising the ticket. For Romney, Ryan, Dan Senor, former leader of the Iraq Provisional Authority.
Oh my God.
Kofor Black, former CIA official, vice chairman of Blackwater. John Bolton, Cheney U.S. ambassador. Elliot Cohen, Project for a New American Century. Anyone remember PNAC? Remember that name?
Uh-uh.
Oh.
PNAC, Project for a New American Century, that's the think tank that Cheney and Pearl and Wolfowitz, along with, who is that jerk off, William Kristol, they wrote the document, where they wrote the document saying that absent another Pearl Harbor type event, you know, the Clinton administration had set back the defense spending in our country so far that absent another Pearl Harbor type event, it would take decades to bring us back into the forefront.
Wow.
That was written prior to 9/11, of course. And then we had that Pearl Harbor type event, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure.
Waleed Fares, a scholar on anti-terrorism, a Lebanese Christian with ties to Lebanese militia. Michael Hayden, Bush Cheney CIA and NSA director. Max Boot, senior CFR fellow and PNAC. Eric Edelman, former Dick Cheney aide. I mean, it just, yeah, it goes on and on. See, that's one thing. If you really look into the politics of the last 80 years, you'll find that it's these small, tight-knit circles of people. You look up who Cheney, you know, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, George Bush. So who are these guys? Well, Bush is a former director of the CIA, and Cheney was under the Ford administration. Rumsfeld was in the Ford administration. These guys are thick as thieves.
Yep, it's all the same usual suspects, and it's a very tight-knit circle. This is the Illuminati. This is they are the mosquito class. That's it. And they
now, the article,
same people, oh.
Now, the article does raise an interesting question, and it's one that I've been asking and I haven't really delved into. And I apologize because I have been sidetracked with my little project. And it's one of those things I kind of work in a strange way. When I started on my little project, I got into something that I don't normally do, which is carpentry and cabinetry. And I'm completely consumed with it at this point. I spend my days looking at ads for different power tools, table saws and routers and all kinds of crazy stuff. And so I'm totally not focused on what's going on, and that's probably a good thing. But I find this interesting. Was Libya a right-wing October surprise? One genuine point of friction between the Obama and Romney-Ryan camp is the Libyan terror attack of 9/11/12. The attack, including the assassination of Ambassador Christopher Stevens, was carried out by the Al-Qaeda freedom fighters. Let's rewind the clock to 1979 for a moment, when they were called the Mujahideen freedom fighters, that helped the U.S. overthrow the regime of Muammar Gaddafi. These assets are closely linked to American neoconservatives, including a large contingent of figures behind the Bush-Cheney apparatus. There is little doubt that it was a false flag operation. The question remains, what high-ranking Washington figures were involved? Who benefits? Mm-hmm. Was it an October surprise on the part of the right wing to humiliate the Obama administration, steal the election, or an incident that was part of a larger bipartisan consensus agenda? I would suggest that it is the latter. I mean, you know, I just, either the folks in the Obama administration are 100% wholly incompetent, or this was part of a larger operation, and I compare it to the Gunrunner scandal, and I think that's probably an accurate depiction of it. Because long before we were running, you know, weapons down across the southern border into Mexico, we've been running arms and trafficking arms over in the Middle East and around the globe. For crying out loud, we go back to, you know, Ali North and the Iran-Contra scandal. You go back even further than that, we were funneling arms and training through the ISI in Pakistan to Afghanistan and the Mujahideen freedom fighters under Jimmy Carter and Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is still one of Obama's advisors. I mean, you know, when does it end? And when do we when do we stop and say, you know, there isn't a dime's worth of difference between the agenda that these guys are blowing
right.
up our skirts. It's just that they put forth this ideological divide between them. And I think
uh-huh.
that ideological divide is largely for public consumption.
Right. It's smoke and mirrors.
Right. The Republicans are suddenly the evil rich guys that are all for the one percenters, the Wall Streeters, right? Even though under the Democrats, we got all these bailouts and they're bailing out the union fat cats. And I mean, can we not as a society sit back and say, you know, they're both full of crap?
Yeah. It's the Keystone Cops and the Three Stooges put together. I mean, I've said this before. Look at the people that we have on our, even all of Blog Talk Radio who thinks like we do at Patriot Families. My God, we should assemble ourselves and go take the whole thing over. And we couldn't do half of the horrible job that these, you know what I mean? We could do so much better.
Well, that's
I just,
and you know, one of the things about an outsider, a true outsider,
right.
coming in, and when I say a true outsider, even someone like a Ron Paul, because not a single lobbyist bothered to knock on his door, he's
right.
an outsider because he's not influenced by all the outside pressures and
garbage.
Influences that the other 534 are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would like to think that the majority of us going into a presidency or Congress for the first time without getting mired down, if there were a way to
mm-hmm.
do it where you didn't get mired down in the system,
right.
because, Linda, you're in the midst of it and you see it, and it's horrendous. We wouldn't have these unreasonable ideologies, and we
right.
would simply apply logic.
And the Constitution.
See, logic gets thrown out the window because there's too many people pulling at the coattails and peddling influence.
Right.
And they're all waving
a
handful of dollars at you.
Right, but there are people like Ron Paul and, go back in time, Elliot Ness, who are untouchable. And that's what you need, people of true principles and character, and they're not cowardice. I mean, how else do you explain it? I mean,
well,
God, they're that easily swayed? There's no character there.
But again, and
my
I think you give the perfect analogy or comparison between Ron Paul and Elliot Ness. What Elliot
He's
Ness...
not for sale.
But
yeah.
what Ness did was completely unconstitutional. It was dead wrong.
Well,
from a standpoint of true liberty, you know,
mm-hmm.
individual rights. And so I think that's a demonstration also how it could go horribly wrong with all the best of intentions.
Right. But he was not, they couldn't buy him, is what I'm trying to say.
Sure. No, I understand. I get that completely. I know exactly what you were trying to say, but I think that brings up a stark comparison.
Yeah.
You're right. Neither one of them could be put off, neither Ness nor Ron Paul. And Ness, I'm sure in his mind, was absolutely certain that he was doing the right thing because it was, after all, the law.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, I get that part. Yeah, because there's more factions than just the money aspect. But this is what to me, this greed and this succumbing to the natural, if you will, and saying, okay, yeah, it's like they're all for just what's your price. That's what we're dealing with. And some people cannot be bought. So, and there's very, very, very few of them, as you know. Because,
oh, well, sure.
There were only three who did not vote for the H.R. 347, and that is a very sad statement on our situation.
Well, I think it just gives a synopsis of where we're at. Not in a good place.
I know.
When you've got, out of 535 politicians, you've got three that can see a clear and concise picture of the constitutional limits of government. That's not very good. That doesn't bode well for constitutionality.
And
you know,
absolute freedom, which is what we're trying to strive for.
One of the other pictures I had posted last night, which also was too doggone small to read, unfortunately, was a cover of Time magazine with a picture of the Constitution in the background and says, "Does it matter anymore?"
I know, it's sad. It's time for a Yorktown moment. We need to be crossing that Delaware again, dude.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's exactly why I chose the song from Muse about time for a revolution while we've still got the guns in our hands.
You got it.
That's why I chose that song as an opening,
because
the hour is pretty late. And I forget who it was that I was listening to the other day. They were talking about I guess it was Lindsey Williams, and he said, "Look, the dollar is dead. We just haven't realized it yet."
Yeah, they just haven't had a decent funeral, and it's coming. I mean, and it's not going to be pretty. So if they really do want a revolution, I think we should let them start it, and we'll just finish it. How's that?
Well, and, we may well see, I see everyone's favorite Islamic leader, Louis Farrakhan, who somehow manages to stay off the terrorist watch list. I don't know how in the hell you do that. He's vowing that there's going to be blood in the streets if Obama is not reelected. And again, I think, this goes back to something I talked about on previous shows. Obama being defeated is the perceptual equivalent of the entitlement class watching the gravy train pull out of the station and they're not on board.
Exactly. So a take on it is, when I say that let them start it and we finish it, because if we try to do the reverse, it'll come up like the French Revolution and we will wind up with Hugo Chavez. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Have you guys read any of the tweets and stuff that have been out there about rioting?
No.
Let me give you some quotes. These are, pulled off of Twitter and that kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
that people are posting online. If Obama don't get reelected and Romney wins, on life every white person's getting pistol whipped and I'm starting a riot. If Obama don't win, let's start a riot so Romney know what he's getting himself into.
Oh, my God.
You know you ain't shit if you got to make ma-fuckas vote for Romney. Man, Obama better get back in office or black folks will riot.
Oh, my God.
If Romney wins, I'm going on a rampage.
Well, let him.
Says if Mitt Romney wins, I think it's our duties as black folks to riot and F stuff up.
Oh, that's what's going to happen, Ron.
If that happens, you and I can't stop that. We can stop it at our doorstep, but we're not going to go I'm not going to go confront these people. If they want to bring it to my house, that's another story.
This one sums up exactly what I was just talking about. I heard Mitt Romney trying to take away food stamps. If he do, I'ma start a riot. I'ma start a riot.
Oh my God. Oh my God. That's so sad.
I'll put you a link. I've been reading these. This has been on Drudge and Prison Planet and The Blaze and just about everywhere you can look.
They sure like that plantation, don't they?
That's just it.
It's bad.
It is.
Bad. You and I, we look, there's still some semblance of the rule of law. Not much, but you and I are not authorized to go running out like a little militia unless we take to do that. That's not my job. If they come... I want to have self-defense, then they can bring it to my door, and they'll lose. That's it. I'm not going out and confront them purposely or, you know, start a white riot. That's ridiculous. That's not civil. I mean, it doesn't make sense. So I don't know what would happen at that point. That would be the trigger for the old martial law, I'm sure.
That's what I was saying. That's the other scenario, you know. And I don't doubt for a moment that you're going to see that, just plain and simple. You know, how widespread it'll actually be is a whole nother story. And, of course, you know, it'll be the man keeping everybody down. But, of course, they don't see the obverse of the man keeping all of us working stiffs down by stealing half our paycheck to pay for all this crap. They never see the other side of that coin.
Exactly. I mean, all of us are on the plantation. Some of us just happen to have different skin color.
I think that's really the reality of it. Regardless, the man has to be keeping somebody down to keep everybody down.
Oh, man. There goes your anti-Austrian economics central planning deal.
Absolutely.
A little shock. Yeah.
Yes, Robert.
Do you think that if Romney ever got in, it would repeal the Patriot Act?
I don't think Romney has any intention of repealing the Patriot Act.
Nope, I don't.
Not only that, the president can't repeal any damn thing.
No, they'd have to go through the process.
Congress would have to want to repeal it. And I don't think you got a snowball's chance in Hades if that ever happened.
Exactly. I agree with you. Not unless everybody's out of there and we get some real outsiders in on that.
You know, if you buy into the rhetoric, they want to repeal and replace Obamacare. But I don't think you're going to see a repeal of Obamacare. I think what you're going to see is an amendment process.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And there's not going to be any repeal of the damn thing.
No,
they're going
to
amend it.
Yeah, instead of doing what they should do and put it into a big trash can and burn it for the dustbin of history, then I won't be satisfied.
You know, we can go back to one of my previous shows where I went on a rant about one of our congressmen from right here in Georgia, Congressman Phil Gingrey, who's a doctor. And a very amiable man. If you talk to him, he's got a very charming way of speaking and he uses simple language, you know, and I think genuinely a nice guy, but I think also he's got his head in his southern posterior because he's one of the leading cheerleaders of replacing Obamacare with our own plan. How about we replace it with nothing, you jackass?
Yeah. That's me. Absolutely. Burn it, and never speak of it again. It should be up to the states and the communities. Get over it.
And see, that's one of Romney's ideas, is block granting everything to the states. But again, you still have the federal Leviathan as the middleman in this whole damn scenario.
Exactly.
We can argue that, you know, times have changed and technologies have changed, and so we can't apply the same principles of the past today. But if we go back to a time before we had social services in this country, I think we were much better off.
Oh my gosh, yes.
As far as medical care, you know, the level of care, you were dealing with an individual doctor who had your best interest at heart because you were his direct patient. And, you know, he wanted to keep you alive so that you would continue paying him periodically.
It's the same mentality that you're talking about, the same ideology of a free market, regardless of whether you're walking into a little office of your neighborhood doctor with no middleman, or you go to any supermarket and you deal directly with whoever's running that thing, and if you don't like what they're doing, you go somewhere else.
Sure. You vote with your wallet. You know, Robert gave the perfect example earlier, and, you know, what has happened, what we have devolved medicine or healthcare
yes.
into today, it's like going to get a damn driver's license. Walk over here, take a number, go sit in seat number five. The doctor breezes in, reviews your chart, asks a couple questions, prescribes some medication, and walks on to the next room.
Exactly.
Right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, or orders a bunch of tests, you know.
My doctor spent a whole hour with me today, Ron.
That's unusual.
Very
unusual. He was very pissed off. He was very ticked. And he spent a whole hour doing the neurologist theory work. He was very upset. He was pissed. He was very pissed. He says, this is unbelievable. I'm doing their work for him. I shouldn't be doing this.
I read a great little joke that you might enjoy, Robert. Somebody emailed it to me, and I think I may have sent it out to you and Linda, but it was about the Irishman Patty that went to the local pharmacist.
Oh, yeah.
And he pulled out a bottle from his pocket and a teaspoon, and he poured some of the liquid in the teaspoon and asked the pharmacist to taste it. And so he did, and he swished it around his mouth and swallowed it, and he says, okay. He says, does that taste sweet to you? He says, no, not at all. He says, oh, thank God. My doctor told me to come down here and get my urine checked for sugar.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, my God.
But that's almost where we're at, you know? It's that crazy.
Oh, my Lord.
Well, guys, I'm going to go back to the chat room, and thank you so much for listening to my rants and everything else, and it was a pleasure.
Thank you guys for tuning in and putting up with my my ranting and rambling.
Ron, that was the joke of the year.
Actually, I like the one about the Cheerios better, but, you know.
Oh, you can tell that to me later. I can only have one joke at a time with you.
Oh, no, the one was two little boys. They were brothers. One was six and one was four. And the six-year-old told his four-year-old brother, he said, you know, I think it's about time you and I started cussing. And the four-year-old started cussing.
Oh, okay.
And the four-year-old agreed. And so he says, tell you what we'll do. Tomorrow morning when we go down for breakfast, he says, I'll say something with the word hell in it. And you say something with the word ass in it. So he agreed, and the next morning they went down to the breakfast table, and Mom asked the oldest boy, what would you like for breakfast this morning? He says, ah, hell, Mom, give me a bowl of Cheerios. Well, that didn't go over so well. Mom smacked him out of the chair, and he fell on the floor and got up and took off running, and she was right on his heels, swatting his behind with every step, all the way up to his room, and she slammed the door and told him, stay in here till I let you out. She came back downstairs, and she looked at the four-year-old and sternly asked him, what would you like for breakfast this morning? And in a trembling voice, he says, I'm not sure, but you can bet your ass it isn't Cheerios.
That's a great joke. That is a great joke. That's a great joke.
Yeah, you know, you're reading it, and you're just certain that that kid is not going to utter that word out of his mouth, and he finds a way to work it in there. Must have been little Johnny.
That reminds me, you know, reminds me of my next-door neighbor, my childhood next-door neighbor, right? He was a cusser. He taught me how to cuss. Do you know what he used to say to his grandparents? This is an honest God's true rock. I'd be spending the night, and he'd wake up with his grandparents in the morning, and he used to go to his grandparents. He goes, which one of you son of a bitch is going to make my breakfast? And I said, God almighty, Jimmy, what are you doing? You're going to get yourself killed.
Wow. I can guarantee you those words would not have been uttered in my grandfather's house. You'd been wearing your teeth for a necklace.
Unbelievable how this kid cussed. He cussed like a drunken sailor. He taught me how to cuss, and he got in a lot of trouble.
Well, Robert,
that's the way it was growing up.
We've only got a few minutes left. You know, tomorrow night we're going to have Mr. Bill Strong back with us for Patriot Families Chat at 7 o'clock. And then, of course, on Wednesday night we're going to have the wonderful Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. Thursday we'll have Miss Terry Rowland. Friday, I'm hoping that Mike will be back on his show. The hot seat left is never right. Sorry. And then, of course, Saturday, Mr. Michael Magic, and then back again Sunday with yours truly. So I thank you all for listening in and calling in, being part of the show. And I'm going to take us out with a song. Brought us in with one. I'm going to take us out with one and one of my favorites. And it just really sums up where we're at right now and where we're going to be in 3 months. And that is Stuck Right in the Middle Together. Even though we may not always agree. God bless. Thanks for calling in.
God bless, Ron.
God bless.